Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
This week's edition of Says You, once again featuring Charlotte, North Carolina's own wordsmith, Mike Collins.
He did very well, Mike did, at the first game, don't you think, everybody? He did very well. He felt even better after he threw up after the show.
We're that game that has all those strange words with all those strange definitions.
It's the horse-drawn, elegant carriage that took you to the insane asylum. It's the Surrey with the lunatic fringe on top.
So come join us in our revelry. Remember, the play's the thing. The score, not important. In a way, you're absolutely right.
Can I have 10 points?
The best of Witten wordplay is yet to come today. 5 minutes hence we'll gather, and Says You will we play after this.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The Israeli government has given final approval for the construction of more than 1,000 new homes in Jewish settlements on occupied Palestinian land. The housing minister says they would be built in the West Bank and East Jerusalem to meet the housing needs of Israeli citizens. The BBC's Kevin Conley reports that the announcement comes 3 days before the two sides are due to resume peace talks in Jerusalem.
Palestinians see continued Israeli construction on the land where they aspire to create a new state as one of the biggest obstacles to peace, and the timing of this announcement may deepen the sense of pessimism that surrounds renewed negotiations even before they've really begun. Most countries regard Israel's policy of building on the land its armies captured in the war of 1967 as a clear breach of international law, although Israel does not accept that. The construction minister, Uri Ariel, comes from a party which opposes the very idea of a Palestinian state bordering Israel on the west bank of the River Jordan. He said no country could allow itself to be dictated to about where it could and could not build.
The BBC's Kevin Conley reporting from Jerusalem. Federal investigators are on the scene of Friday's deadly plane crash in Connecticut. They've revealed new details about the accident that left 4 people dead and 2 homes destroyed. Diane Orson of member station WNPR has more on the preliminary investigation.
The National Transportation Safety Board says the small plane, a Rockwell International Turbo Commander 690B, was inverted when it hit the ground. Patrick Murray is the investigator in charge.
The airplane impacted the ground and the house upside down in a 60 to 70 degree angle.
He says the pilot was in communication with an air traffic controller just before slamming into 2 homes near Tweed New Haven Airport, and there's no preliminary indication that anything was wrong with the plane. The victims include 2 children, ages 1 and 13, who were in one of the homes. Also the pilot, a former Microsoft executive, and his teenage son. For NPR News, I'm Diane Orson in New Haven.
Today is the Obama family's first full day of summer vacation. NPR's Ari Shapiro reports a president arrived in Martha's Vineyard last night.
The island off Cape Cod in Massachusetts has become an annual getaway for President Obama and his family, balancing the annual winter vacation in Hawaii every Christmas. The schedule usually involves lots of golf and not much news. White House spokesman Jay Carney says the president has a core staff along to keep him briefed.
He will be, of course, regularly updated on the current threat that we've discussed. He'll be regularly updated on issues going on around the world and the country. But with any luck, he'll also have some time to, you know, relax with his family.
Some Republicans are criticizing the president for taking an expensive week off with so many crises unfolding around the world. In response, Carney suggested looking at what those same Republicans said when President Bush took vacations. Ari Shapiro, NPR News, The White House.
And you're listening to NPR News. Evacuation orders remain in effect for several communities threatened by the so-called Silver Fire in the mountains east of Los Angeles, but firefighters are reporting progress this weekend. The wildfires burned some 30 square miles and destroyed 26 homes, but it's now 70% contained. Officials expect to have it fully contained sometime this evening. The week-long search for a missing California teenager has ended. FBI agents rescued 16-year-old Hannah Anderson and shot and killed her apparent abductor at a campsite in the Idaho wilderness yesterday. Her ordeal began when her mother and brother were killed last weekend. The popular nightclub and television singer Edie Gourmet has died in Las Vegas. Her career spanned 50 years, as NPR's Jim Hawk reports.
Blame it! As a solo act, Edie Gourmet had a huge hit in 1963 with Blame It on the Bossa Nova. She also performed with her husband, Steve Lawrence, on TV shows and in nightclubs. She and Lawrence also recorded Spanish language songs, which became hits in Latin America. Lawrence said in a statement, "While my personal loss is unimaginable, the world has lost one of the greatest pop vocalists of all time." A cause of death was not immediately known. Edie Gourmet was 84. Jim Hawk, NPR News.
Jim Furyk will try to land the second major golf title of his career when he starts today's final round at the PGA Championship. He says he's got an opportunity.
That's the word you use, and that's exactly the way I'm viewing it. I'm going to have fun with it, and I'm going to enjoy the opportunity.
Furyk is carrying a one-shot lead after yesterday's third round at Oak Hill Country Club in suburban Rochester, New York. He's 9-under for the tournament. I'm Giles Snyder, and this is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Pimsleur Language Programs, celebrating 50 years in 2013 and offering portable audio courses in 50 languages. Pimsleur.com.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Charlotte, North Carolina comes from the good folks at WFAE-FM and the historic Dunhill Hotel, on Charlotte's Museum Mile, and on the web at dunhillhotel.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of Pease Auditorium in Charlotte, North Carolina, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. Television host, the prince of pronouns, Mr. Barry Nolan. Philanthropic guru and adverb advocate, Francine Akbar. And Charlotte grammarian, first time says user, trust me, the bravest guy in the room, Mr. Mike Carlin. I don't know, Mike, you want to be captain this week?
When a 10-year-old comes up to you at the intermission and says, good luck. Sorry about the last game. You don't even want to go back out, much less be captain. So
I will.
Francine, our adverb advocate.
Francine will be the captain. To my left, team two, words to him are a plaything. Logic, that's something else. Murray Horowitz. Literature is her bailiwick, art and culture her forte, Lenore Shannon. And words and puns are her stock and trade, though we sometimes wish she'd barter, Miss Carolyn Faye Fox.
Richard, I believe it is correctly pronounced Fort. Sorry about that.
It's true.
Oh, okay.
Toy boat.
Unless you're arrogant and pretentious.
That's right. Who's going to be the captain this week?
Murray.
Yes, words are my plaything.
Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners to grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a round of definitions and derivations. For 5 points...
The ever popular.
For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, divine the origins of the following common words and phrases. Carolyn, security blanket.
Security blanket. It is anything that gives the user or the wearer a sense of security and warmth and well-being.
That's the first 5 points.
The origin, from Linus. Let go of my scarf, Lenore.
It's not from Linus. Most people think it is, but it goes back
to security blanket. Would it be from some psychologist?
No, it is.
I think it's financial. Is it not? Does it have a financial?
No, I think it's a military term.
It was in World War II.
Right.
Boy, we've run the gamut there.
All right.
No, this goes back away. This goes back a little further.
How far back does it go, Richard?
1920s.
1920s, security blanket. Okay, would this have something to do with the stock market?
It does not.
The Depression? The Depression?
Nothing whatsoever. No, it's you've got 7 points so far because there is the World War II derivation, and it's getting there.
Wait. They used to catch people who jumped out of burning buildings in blankets.
What a marvelous guess. Give him an extra point. Eight points total.
But he's
for
wrong,
that.
Right?
That's not correct, it's of not course. Correct. But well, we'll all learn a little something. Many assume it was Charles Schulz's prop for his character Linus. It was a product from the 1920s that was affixed to a crib to keep an infant from escaping. It was called the security blanket.
Now you tell me.
You know, I used barbed wire on my daughter's crib. You were tucked in.
Try this one, Mike. Definition and derivation of grotesque.
Grotesque is anything that is just abhorrent to look at, I would think, or abhorrent to contemplate.
It is. That's the first 5 points.
All right. The derivation of grotesque.
I would have you look at the word and see if anything occurs to you. That's where you're going to find the answer here.
Does it come from theatrical?
It does not, no.
It was before they got the knack of burlesque.
As hideous as this might sound, I'm giving them some points for that.
Gross.
Yeah,
No, that's not it, actually. Look at the first four letters and see if that occurs to you.
Grotto?
Grotto is exactly right.
Oh,
can you expound upon that?
Grotto-esque.
Yeah, grotto-esque is exactly right. I'm going to give you 8 points for this. Anybody want to try to flesh this out?
It was the idea of creepy monsters that were in there?
In where?
In the catacombs.
In the catacombs down below the...
Churches.
Grand Central Station.
Yeah, Grand Central Station. No, actually, Rome is where you want to go for this. Yeah, it actually means grotto-like and refers not to picturesque grottos that are lovely and blue, but rather the funereal vaults under Rome where the walls were adorned with eerie, fantastic images of death. This evolved into the Italian for grotto-like paintings and into English as grotesque. So that's where it comes from, and we got our second ooh of the day. What do you know? All right, Murray, I love this one. Definition and derivation of lunatic fringe.
Well, the lunatic fringe is clearly the extreme, irrational part of any movement of partisans or people who adhere to one belief or view.
That's the first 5 points.
So the lunatic fringe...
How about a haircut?
Would it have
I'm
anything...
Sorry?
A haircut.
That's exactly right. She's exactly right. Though Teddy Roosevelt adapted this phrase to describe political opponents, of course, it originally was just a name for a hairstyle in the 19th century. Fringes are bangs in England, and styles with cropped hair and curved or wavy bangs hanging down were called lunatic fringe.
And Peter Nunes was right among them.
And there you go. 10 points. Very good. Nice job.
All right.
Try this one, Francine. And don't be fooled by this. Definition and derivation of chaise lounge.
Well, a chaise lounge is a reclining couch.
It is.
And don't be fooled. A chaise in French is a chair.
That's correct.
A lounge, we're guessing, it's a chair upon which you recline.
That's where you got fooled.
Yes, I guess
it's
that
the
might
word,
be the
it's
point.
It's the usage lounge. Of the word lounge and where that lounge. Comes from. Can you want to...
Is it more like lounger for long? Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Yes,
that.
Very good. It is exactly that. It's not that you're lounging. It's that it's long, so you can stretch your legs out. It's the type of chair where you can do just that. and it was called Long Chair. This is one of my favorites of the day, Lenore. Definition and derivation of steeplechase.
Wow.
Well, a steeplechase is a type of horse race. I'm trying to think of it.
It has to do with jumping. It's also a human race.
It's also a human race, yes.
And it means it has to do with leaping over obstacles and water and stuff like that.
That's exactly right.
It's a terrific party. It's a great event with lots of picnic baskets and everyone looking so grand and champagne and everything like that. So steeplechase, where did it come from? I'm the famous dog.
Well, if you're jumping high, you're chasing steeples, but maybe that's too literal.
Well, this has to do with chasing steeples, all right, but not in that sense. This is pretty literal.
Why would you chase a steeple? Steeple's there. You know,
it's not going anywhere. Exactly.
That's right.
So chasing
is, it just refers to any kind of exercise in futility.
In a way, you're absolutely right.
Can I have 10 points?
So was there a competition to build the biggest steeple that no one could, that kind of became an impossible task after
not
a while?
Not to build the biggest
was
steeple,
was it architecturally?
No.
Is it sort of like tilting at windmills, that if you're chasing steeples, you're, you know, just jumping over hurdles for no.
Well, in a way, but I'm going to give you 8 points because you got a long way there. But I'm going to go to the other side. Do you have any thoughts?
Now it's done in an arena. Once upon a time, was it set up so that you go most of the way out of town and you're going to just race across country and you can see the church steeple off there? And when they say go, the first one to get to the steeple wins.
You know something? You would have gotten 9 points for that. That's very, very close. Listen to this. It's, of course, the race over obstacles, jumps, water, that kind of thing. Unsuccessful fox hunters returning from a fruitless chase would spy a church steeple in the distance. In the late 18th century version of Last One There is a Rotten Egg, they would dash over hill and dale to be first, thus alleviating the stigma of foxless fortune.
Very good.
So that's where it comes
love
from.
Love that answer. That's
I enjoyed finding out about that one. And finally, Barry, you get a total of 8 points for that. And finally, Barry, definition and derivation of tycoon.
Tycoon.
Yes, T-Y-C-O-O-N.
Tycoon is someone who has been fabulously successful and has accrued a great deal of wealth.
That's correct. That's the first 5 points.
And the word may come from the feeling that some of these people were bandits.
Why would the word...
Because they would have raccoon-like, you know, the little bandity...
Well, I walked right into that one, didn't I? No, that's not... What language would you think it comes from?
In India?
Oh, what a great guess. No, that's not correct, I'm sorry to say.
So this was Chinese?
Not quite.
No.
Asian?
Yes.
This was Thailand?
No.
Audience? Japanese.
Japanese is exactly right. I'm going to give you, 7 points, you figure? 7 points for that, because you did get the definition. It is from the Japanese tycoon, T-A-I-K-U-N, I hope I pronounced that correctly, meaning great prince. He was the hereditary commander-in-chief of the Japanese army and held power and sway that we now attribute to tycoons. So it comes from Japanese, and that's the definition. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Farewell Drifters. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Murray, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Francine if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Murray, if she can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word that is the contribution of Bill Tonra of Everett, Massachusetts. Thank you, Bill. That word is strickle. S-T-R-I-C-K-L-E, strickle. Gentlemen?
Say it once and shout it out loud. He's a man with his head in a cloud. or it's down. You don't know what's coming around. Change the tone, but the voice is the same. Always screaming out the same old refrain. They don't know if he's right or insane. No one listens, but he don't complain. Everyone is talking, everyone is singing the blues. Everyone is talking, everyone is saying it's true. Everyone is talking, everyone is talking for two.
And so it begins the new season of Says You, one that features an October return to West Hartford, Connecticut, and a February foray to San Francisco. Tickets, information, and details are now up for those shows at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Other dates soon posted this season's Beantown Follies and Winter Trip South during New England's Ice to Mud season. Meanwhile, for those in Hartford and San Francisco, we hope this is the year you'll become part of a live performance of Says You. Says You returns after this from home.
On the next On Being, we're fascinated with outer space, but the bottom of the ocean is just as alien, just as mysterious.
And keeps us alive, oh, by the way.
Oceanographer Sylvia Earle has walked on the bottom of the sea, and she takes us there with singular urgency and passion. I'm Krista Tippett. Please join me. That's from APM.
Join us for On Being, Sunday afternoons at 3 and again Sunday nights at 11.
Fleetwood Mac's Rumours turned Private Pain into one of the best-selling and most celebrated albums of all time. And Lindsey Buckingham knows the songs can't take all the credit.
The appeal was not just musical, and it was pretty unique having two couples that were going through personal turmoil and yet somehow rising above that.
A candid conversation with Lindsey Buckingham this week on Sound Opinions.
Tune in for Sound Opinions Friday nights at 10 and Sunday nights at 7.
Everyone is talking, everyone is saying it's true. Everyone is talking, everyone is talking for two.
Support for Says You in Charlotte, North Carolina comes from the good folks at WFAE-FM and the historic Dunhill Hotel on Charlotte's Museum Mile and on the web at dunhillhotel.com. That's D-U-N-H-I-L-L.
Everyone is talking, everyone is talking for two. Everyone is talking, everyone is talking for two.
That was the Farewell Drifters. That's Zach Bevel, Joshua Britt, Clayton Britt, and Dean Merrill. Thank you very much, you guys. For giving us a little time with the word strickle, we will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
Strickle. Okay, if you've ever done any baking, you know that precise measurements are very important. And you've probably used a strickle. Because a strickle is any kind of straight edge that's used for leveling flour in a cup or grain in a container so that you don't have a heaping cup of something. You use a strickle. Level it off.
Straight edge.
So like my finger.
Yes. Well, you're not really a straight edge. And
oh.
It's a straight edge. You level straight off edge. The top of a cup,
yes,
or something like that, and that's a straight,
yes,
edge.
And I'd gladly pay a nickel for a totally accurate strickle.
Okay.
Otherwise, in an hour with all my flour, I'll be in a terrible pickle.
Or, if you turned it sideways, you could use a sickle for a strickle.
You could.
You could.
Okay, if that's what you're willing to accept, fine. I understand. It could be that. It could be a straight edge used in baking, leveling things off. That could be it. Or it could be something else. What say you, Murray?
Well, it does have to do with straightness. Real delicatessen aficionados know that they need to ask for the half-sour dills that are not curved, but that are perfectly straight. And the straight pickle is known as the strickle. No, that's not true. This is a quick crowd. It only took them about 15 minutes to take on that one.
They followed. They hung on every word, though.
They did really
good. Yeah.
No. It's a kind of a harness that links together two or more pairs of horses. So big teams of horses had a connected kind of harness called a strickle.
A connected harness. Got a couple of teams of horses. Want to get them together? Ben Hur would have used a strickle.
Yeah.
Or it could be something else. Lenore, what say you?
Well, Carolyn was correct in heading down the into the culinary world. Strickle is actually an illness that you get from eating soured milk products, most particularly cheese, like bad cheese that's gone past its, even if it's, you know, kind of disgusting to begin with, it's really bad. And you eat it and you get very sick, like, oh my, oh me, please throw away that stinky brie. So it's, but it's specific to, an illness from a sour milk product.
So you get a hold of some bad brie, you could come down with strickle. Is that right? It could be that. It could be the harness that someone like Ben Hur would have used to connect teams of horses, or it could be that straight edge that you use to level off the top of things. It's one of those three, and the choice, Francine, is yours.
I seek your input. I will tell you, I've spent a fair amount of time in the kitchen, and I've never encountered a strickle, I don't think.
Well, in my time from chariot racing, I'd go with...
Yeah?
Yeah? Man, I knew you were old.
Movies.
I didn't know you were that old.
Yeah?
I'd go with the harness linking two teams of horses.
You would?
I would have gone with the pickle, but he changed his answer.
Yeah, well, he likes to do that. Yeah,
so, he had me at pickle.
Yes, yeah, he had me at pickle.
I think it has to be the horses.
You think it has to be the horses?
Yeah.
Well, I don't see anything compelling about the others.
Right.
So we'll go with the horses.
They're going to go with the horses. Murray, that was your definition. A harness that links together teams of horses. Is that, in fact, what a strickle is?
Strickle, please make something
up. Oh!
It is not, which means it's something else. Audience, your turn. What do you think? How many say the straight edge? How many say the illness you get from bad brie? Oh. I would say, Carolyn, that this audience thinks that a strickle is the straight edge that you use for leveling things. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Strickle, a straight edge used for leveling grain in the container.
That's exactly what it is.
Good job.
10 points for your team. Let's go on to round three, a round of says who. Using the clues provided, please tell me who uttered the following quotable quotes. Carolyn, this quintessential Southern belle famously said, I'm as pure as the driven slush.
Was that, it was Tallulah Bankhead?
It was exactly Tallulah Bankhead. Very good.
There, you know, Tallulah Bankhead, when we played in Camden, she had played the Camden Opera House, and I remember when I was reading up about her, one of her greatest lines
Can you say
was
this?
That when she ran into her husband, an ex-husband whom she hadn't seen in years, she turned to him and said, I thought I told you to wait outside.
Yeah. I remember that. All right. Try this one, Mike. Attributed to many, it was this solitary soul who offered, beware of all enterprises that require new clothes.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Solitary soul. That's obviously a clue. Huh?
This is the guy at Walden Pond.
Henry David Thoreau.
Henry David Thoreau is exactly
that's
right.
Amazing.
10 points.
That's
exactly who that was. Try this one, Murray.
All the time.
When asked by a reporter what he thought of Western civilization, he replied, "I think it would be a good idea."
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I know that one. I think it was my dad.
Probably.
God, something tells me Bertrand Russell, but it's wrong.
When asked by a reporter what he thought of Western civilization, he replied, "I think it would be a good idea."
You sure you think it's England?
Well,
I don't know. Western Bertrand Russell's pretty obscure.
How about a clue?
Yeah. Well, that'll cost you some points.
Listen, at this point, that's a fair exchange.
Well, how about this for a clue? When asked by a reporter what he thought of Western civilization, this great soul replied...
Oh, Mahatma Gandhi.
Mahatma Gandhi is exactly right. That's a pretty big clue. We'll give him 6 points for that. I think that's fair. That's a pretty good clue. Try this one, Francine. This acerbic Algonquin is known for saying, "If you want to know what God thinks of money, just look at the people he gave it to."
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll guess Dorothy Parker.
And you'll guess correctly. 10 points. Very good.
She was an Algonquin. I thought she was a Sioux.
Try this one, Lenore. This perpetually perplexed pianist gave this self-assessment: underneath this flabby exterior lies an enormous lack of character.
Could you read the question again? Underneath this flabby exterior?
Yes. This perpetually perplexed pianist gave this self-assessment: underneath this flabby exterior lies an enormous lack of character.
Was it Victor Borgia?
It
was Liberace.
It was not Liberace either.
No, it wasn't Fats Waller.
A flabby
exterior.
Enormous lack of character. You know,
Oscar Levant.
Oscar Levant is exactly right.
There we go.
You can hear him saying it when he says it, yeah.
Thank you, Murray.
Give him 6 points for that one, too. Good. That was a good job, Murray. That was a really tough one. And finally, try this one, Barry. I learned in school that money isn't everything, that it's happiness that counts. So my mother sent me to a different school. Oh, boy.
This is an American?
Not really.
Not really.
That's a clue, Christine. That's a clue.
It's
somebody who came to America.
Oh, sure did.
Comedian.
It's somebody that is relatively modern?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Jump in.
Bob Hope.
No, not Bob Hope. It's a good guess. That's a great... I can actually give you the...
Jack Benny?
No. I learned in school that money isn't everything, that it's happiness that counts. So Mama sent me to a different school.
Mama.
Yeah. Mama.
I don't think they're going to get this one.
This is painful.
Is this a George line Burns. Out of Gypsy?
No, it's not out of Gypsy, but...
No, it's not out of Gypsy.
Is it a line out of a musical?
It's funny that you would have mentioned so many male characters.
Because it's a female character.
Yeah.
And this is Mae West.
It sounds like Mae West, not quite.
We give up.
They give up. I'm going to go to the other side.
Was it Zsa Zsa?
Yeah, of course it was Zsa Zsa.
Oh,
of course it was Zsa Zsa. Zsa Zsa Gabor is the correct answer to that. Good job, Lenore.
This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Barky Thompson of Baltimore. Barky writes, "I love catching you folks in errors, and I often get the chance. Like the time you mistitled Darwin's opus, or when you called George VI George V. Do you have any of those around for spotlighting? Well, Barky, we found the first one you mentioned. So see if you can find the gaffe Barky found in the round we called Op-Sit."
I'll read a sentence from a famous book, document, or treatise. Please tell me the opus cited. Carolyn, mm-hmm. "To no one will we sell, to no one will we refuse or delay right or justice."
It's a famous book.
Thomas Paine.
No, I will give you one clue here. The
Good.
"we" is the royal "we."
The
The Royal We.
Oh, the Magna
no
Carta.
No one will we sell, to no one will we refuse or delay.
Oh, the Magna right, Carta.
The Magna Carta?
Is it the Magna,
Magna Carta?
Carta
is correct. Good. Give them...
So I had that or the Sears catalog.
Yes.
It's one of those. Mixed
give
up.
Them 7 points for that. Seven points for that effort. Tony?
Yes.
It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest than callous cash payment.
Oh, except for the cash payment. I thought that was a Declaration of Independence.
It is not.
No.
Say it again now. Because it rolls so nicely.
Yes, it's only fair, I guess. It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors, in quotes, and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest than callous cash.
It's a Neanderthal Bill of Rights,
yeah,
I think.
Neanderthal Bill of Rights, yes.
The breakup of the Beatles.
You know, there's really only four guys that get that joke. Yeah. But, you know, they're killing themselves.
Pitiless sounds.
The Communist Manifesto?
The Communist Manifesto. Yeah. Oh. Very good. You know, we feudal ties, naked self-interest, you know. Arnie, before completion-success, before the little fox has quite completed his crossing of the ice, its tail gets wet. No goal or destination is favorable now.
Oh, I know it is.
I know.
Any thoughts from that sign?
Thoreau.
Joel Chandler Harris.
Yeah, neither one. No. No?
Shall we try Thoreau?
I think we have to go to the other side.
For those who vaguely have memories of this period of life, it's the I Ching.
It is the I Ching, hexagram 64. That's exactly right.
Wow. Very good. The actual translation from the Chinese is, go figure. I never was able to make any sense of those hexagrams.
Francine? In looking at nature, it is most necessary to keep the foregoing conclusions always in mind, never to forget that every single organic being around us may be said to be striving to the utmost to increase in numbers.
Very Darwinian.
It's very Darwinian. Yeah.
Origin of the species.
Origin of the species. Very good. 10 points. I think this is your day. Paula? Conspicuous consumption of valuable goods is a means of respectability to the gentleman of leisure.
Yeah, Veblen's theory of the leisure class.
Veblen's theory of the leisure class. Very good. 10 points. Very good. And finally, Barry. The flood of novelty about to crash down upon us will spread from universities and research centers to factories and offices, from the marketplace and mass media into our social relationships, from the community into the home.
It sounds like McLuhan to me.
Is that the medium is the message? Yeah. Cool fire?
It is not.
Is that what's the one about change, the rate of change has changed? Future?
Shock.
Future shock. Alvin Toffler.
Alvin Toffler, future shock. A second guess, 8 points. 7 points.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. That's our look back. Now, back to the present.
Let's go on to round four, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word, two will bluff. 10 points, Murray, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word midden. M-I-D-D-E-N, midden. Gentlemen?
January, we can live in the modern age. Wake up and hear our conscience. Leave it all on New Year's Day. Can you feel that the world is turning? moving out from beneath our feet. This year we're gonna turn with it, modern age to an all new beat. Our life is more than photos in boxes. I don't want to be your lonely companion. Just waiting for the modern age.
There are so many ways to enjoy, says you. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend the live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show and achieve limited fame with a small but dedicated audience. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at SaysYou.net. S-A-Y-S. Y-O-U. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
Next time on Radiolab.
What is there in human nature that allows an individual to act inhumanely, harshly, severely?
Why did you do this? Why did you inflict all this suffering on them, on us? Why?
It was not my personal affair. I had to do what I was ordered.
Does everybody at some point have something dark in them that just tiptoes out, just from time to time?
Join us for Radiolab every Sunday night at 8 and Wednesday night at 10.
I'm Jonathan Goldstein, and this week on Wiretap, Josh ponders his eternal fate and how it may not be his exact cup of tea.
I don't like hell. I get very sweaty. The devil's going to be bossing me around, telling me do this, do that, suffer this, suffer that. I have a problem with authority. You know, I won't be able to choose the music. It's very emasculating.
That's this week's Wiretap from PRI, Public Radio International.
Join us for Wiretap every Sunday night at 10 o'clock.
The Farewell Drifters. Would you help me thank Miss Mary Kate Thompson and Miss Ailsa Carlson for keeping the score? Thanks, you guys. We appreciate it. Thanks very much for giving us a little time with the word midden. We will go first to Mike Collins.
Midden is the kind of is a kind of fish that is found normally in cold water lakes, usually in northern European areas.
A northern European cold water fish. That's a midden. Mm-hmm. Could very well be.
I dated her once.
Hit him, will you? Just hit him. Or it could be something else. Francine, what's your take?
Well, Murray, you could have dated her once. Because midden is the middle sister of three, as in Mr. Take My Midden Maiden. She would be the middle of three sisters who needed to be married off.
The middle of three sisters is the midden. Got to be married off before you can marry off the youngest, I suppose. It could be that. Or it could be something else. Barry, what say you?
Midden. The pile of nuts collected by a squirrel. To use it correctly in a sentence, Donald Trump has the midden touch. He's rich, but he's really nuts.
You're just determined to drive this show up the air, aren't you? I just can't. A pile of nuts collected by a squirrel is a midden. It could be that. It could be the middle sister of three, one that needs to get married, or it could be that northern fish is starting to sound a lot better, isn't it? It is one of those three, and the choice, Murray, is yours.
You know, I was really flustered and until
Barry made that last little intervention because he went on such a tortuous route to get to that Donald Trump joke that I think he might have been trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, that he has the real definition that midden might be it. I don't know.
Do squirrels collect nuts in piles?
No, they put them here and there. They hide them all over the place, because if they put it in a pile, then they would be in danger of losing them all if someone came.
Not obsessive squirrels.
Then I'd go for the squirrels.
Yeah.
I'd go for the squirrels over the fish.
It's too bad. I was just in Brevard, North Carolina this morning, and I could have asked one of the white squirrels that famously populate Brevard.
White squirrels, really?
Yeah.
It's so unusual.
They're really,
we have black squirrels in Cambridge that I've never seen a black squirrel.
Snow white squirrels.
Beautiful.
You know, it's true.
Well, nobody likes the middle sister of three.
No, it sounds too logical.
Maiden-ish.
I could be overreaching here, but I don't know. What do you think?
Well, why don't you
I like the idea that it's a pile.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the cold fish leaves me cold. I don't know. We'll go with the nut pile.
Barry, they think that a midden is the pile of nuts collected by a squirrel. Is that in fact what it is?
We don't think that, but we're just guessing.
Is that in fact what it is?
A midden is the pile of nuts collected by a squirrel.
That's what it is. They've been killing you on the bluffing.
There is a word midden that means like the trash pile that's found in archaeology.
This is what I'm going to hear from all across the country, and I'm glad you brought this up. There is one of the first three definitions for this word, that it's an archaeological pile of waste that human beings leave behind through which scientists sift. And that is one of the definitions. But as I always say, we reserve the right to choose any of the 17 definitions we can find. And that's the one we chose.
Yes, no.
But thank you for embarrassing me in front of the nation.
Oh, sorry.
My pleasure.
Let's go on to round five. Let's close tonight with a round of What's the Difference? Help comes from Linus Rorick Patrick of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and Meg Blau of Seattle. Carolyn, what's the difference between a sprain and a strain?
A sprain and a strain?
Yep.
Advil?
Almost.
All right. Let's see. A sprain and a strain. Well, a strain is not as bad as a sprain. A strain can just be, you know, something quite minor, whereas a sprain is...
More serious, right?
Take it, Murray.
A strain is muscular. You strain a muscle, but a sprain is a disease of the joint, usually caused by an injury.
It's not the joint.
Tendon. The tendon.
The tendon.
No.
The ligament. The
no,
sinews.
Give them 8 points? Points for that?
Sure.
What's the word they're missing, of course?
My dad was a doctor. The shame of it.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Torn.
No. Well...
Tissue.
What's the word they're missing, audience? Ligaments.
Said ligaments.
Oh, you said ligaments?
Yes.
I'm terribly sorry. 10 points.
Among the 55 wild stabs I took, ligament was one.
Wait a minute. Okay. I'm tired of waiting for that dumb bell.
There you go. There you go.
She's taking matters into her own hands.
You bet.
She brought her own bell.
It's a joke
which didn't work particularly well on radio, but you never can tell.
I tried. Richard, what part of didn't you understand?
I get it. All right. Try this one, Mike. What's the difference between, and we're speaking in material science terms, what's the difference between toughness and hardness?
Well, hardness would be something that would be very difficult to break. It would be solid.
Hardness is tested on the sort of diamond scratch test.
Okay.
So
yes,
things
is.
That can be scratched by other things.
And toughness is something that would be difficult to pull apart or
break.
Boy,
is that close? That's about 8 points there. Not quite. Any help from this side?
Toughness, does that have... Hardness has to do with being scratched. Toughness has to do with being dented?
Oh, boy, that's... You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points because you went a long way there. In material science, toughness is the ability of the material to absorb energy without breaking. That's the denting aspect of it. Right. While hardness is the measure of a surface's ability to resist penetration at all. Hmm. And that's the difference. One can take the dent, the other can't. So you were close enough to it, 10 points. Very good.
So that's what material science is.
Yes. In case you were wondering, it's, you know, cleared up now. Try this one, Murray. What's the difference between a cartel and a syndicate?
I have such a wealth of experience with these things.
Yep.
A cartel is something very specific. It's like it's
they're selling something.
You know, I think a cartel is a group of, like an interlocking directorate is a cartel. It's a group of people, an identifiable group of people who conspire or collude or collaborate.
Illegally.
No, not necessarily. It's really? An oil cartel. It's perfectly legal, but they do collaborate and collude. They can not necessarily against the law to fix prices or to
monopolize.
Regulate trade or monopolize in some way.
Yep.
A syndicate is a kind of a more federal system with individual operations that. That cooperate, but don't—they're not an identifiable.
Oh,
what
is it? Is it to do with what they're carteling or syndicating?
Oh,
so syndicate is cartel is goods, and syndicate is news not news, but
services.
Something. It depends on what it is. One is cartel has got something to do with physical goods, like pork bellies.
When you first produce a sitcom, it's a cartel that produces it, but later it's a syndicate that reruns it afterwards.
That's good enough for me. I'm done with that. Here's what the dictionary says. A cartel is specific in that it is a group formed to regulate price and output, just as you said, Murray, while a syndicate is a more versatile term that covers a group joining for a variety of purposes, as in purchasing or investing capital, sharing risk, a lot of different things. So that's the difference. Try this one, Francine. What's the difference between a plutocracy and an oligarchy? And I bring this up because there was a big article on this in the New York Times last week, and it just killed me to read it. But what's the difference between a plutocracy and an oligarchy?
An oligarchy is to do with controlling industries.
I think it's more the control of the governmental control by a small number of favored few.
Rule by an elite, yes.
A plutocracy
is a nation that's ruled by a cartoon dog.
Let me tell you where I am in this process. 10 points, yes, that's where I am in this process. Now, would you tell me what a plutocracy is so we can move along here?
The wealthy?
Yes, that's exactly
right. The wealthy,
right.
That's right.
It's ruled by the wealthy. So I'm glad I gave you the 10 points. Mm. Plutocracy is ruled by the wealthy, while oligarchy is ruled by an elite.
Right.
Not necessarily rich, not necessarily poor, just an elite status.
I like that.
Try this one, Lenore. Try this one. What's the difference between to dishearten and to discourage?
Dishearten? To dishearten is to make someone feel badly about something
inside. Not feel badly, bad.
Feel
bad.
Really?
Right.
It's
yes.
not that
yeah.
bad?
Yeah.
Okay.
No,
you feel
and
badly.
To discourage is to try to stop someone from doing something.
You know something?
Is that
absolutely. Ring that bell.
Is that kind of...
That's yes. pretty much it. To dishearten is to sap the spirit or enthusiasm for by either active or passive means. But as you said, to discourage is to actively try to prevent by expressing disapproval or raising objections or making something seem unwieldy. So, yes, it's a very active and passive thing.
Yay!
10 points. And finally, I'm going to get a whole lot of mail on this, Bear, but see if you can do it. Can you distinguish among insure, I-N-S-U-R-E, ensure, E-N-S-U-R-E.
You don't drink insure.
Yeah. And assure, A-S-S-U-R-E, insure, ensure, and assure.
To ensure, I-N-S-U-R,
yes.
that something is going to happen. To ensure something is to... to be dedicated to the fact that you will be made whole by this, that you will, that there will protect. Be a satisfactory outcome.
To protect.
To protect. To ensure something is to make sure that something will be accomplished, and to assure something is to be confirmatory.
You know something? Once again, that's a long ride, but it's a good one. Now, I'm going to get a lot of mail on this, but this is what I got from the dictionary. To assure is, as you said, A-S-S-U-R-E. To assure a person of something is to make him or her confident of it. To ensure, E-N, is that something happens, is to make certain that it does, to do whatever you have to do to make sure that it happens. And to insure is to issue an insurance policy. And that's what they say it is. And it's, it, you know, I'm sure I'm going to hear a lot from the radio audience, but that's later. Right now, we're looking at a 96-point day for Murray Horowitz's team and a victory. Congratulations. Winners this week. I want to take a moment, and I want to thank Mike Collins.
Bravo.
Up here. And did represented himself and his town just wonderfully. Thank you, Mike. Next time we come down, we'd love to see you. And if you come up north, sit and play with us anytime. Nice to have you here. That is all we have time for in Charlotte. We want to thank everyone here, and that's a lot of people. It's Amanda Thompson, Matt McCauley, Michael Fogelman, Nick Kroeslin, and Alex Nolan, all the folks at the Dunhill Hotel who made everything possible for us. Thanks to Dawn Cloutier, Kevin Salger, Bobby Golobart, and all the folks here, Pease Auditorium at Central Piedmont Community College. We send our best to Roger Sarrow, Brian Talbot, Dale Spear, and all the folks at WFAE here in Charlotte. Sharon Salkin write the words. Antonio Oliard captures the moment. And Zach Moore is soon hard at work senior year. So long today from North Carolina, where a sign was recently posted in a church window, spaghetti dinner Sunday night, prayer and medication to follow. We're keeping it real in Charlotte, and we'll see you all next week.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net.
It's never enough for me.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.